live and local.
From the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette,
we are Acadiana's sports station. 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette.
It's time to step your game up.
Boy, you wouldn't know how to write your name if it wasn't
set for like locker.
It's Rep Game with RP3. Raymond Parts III.
One of God's own prototypes. A high-powered mutant of some kind never even considered for mass production. Too weird to live, too rare to die.
Want to interact? Call in at 337-706-0111.
We have it.
RP3 is taking the mic and bringing you to the center of the sports world on Rep Game with RP3 on 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
You just got to keep living, man. L-I-V-I-N.
Solid. I'll tell you what I'm blathering about. I've got information, man.
Okay, the man who rides Daisy May to finals in December on the campus of LSU.
How cool is that, by the way?
I mean, that's called swag. Here's Devin White, number 9 on my compadre's top 50.
Devin Bush set the mark at what, 4-4-4?
Indeed. And then that's since been taken out by 1/100 of a second. Unofficially, let's see what Devin White does. 4-4-2.
Rich, giddy up.
Giddy up. Indeed. That is your clubhouse leader.
Good morning, Acadiana, and welcome to this Monday Grawl edition of Rap Game with RP3. I am your host, Raymond Parse III, here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios here in Upper Lafayette. You can give us a call today, as always, on the Arco Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111. Once again, 337-706-0111. Jam-packed show for you today. No show tomorrow because of Fat Tuesday. So we're giving you 2 days' worth of shows into one day. Plus, we got to recap the weekend. So on tap today, we're going to have LSU baseball talk. That's not how we anticipated the weekend going for the Tigers. Getting swept by the Longhorns. We'll dive into that. We'll also talk LSU basketball. The men's basketball team was able to put away a pesky Alabama squad on the road. One for only the fifth time in like 25 years there in Coleman Coliseum. Remaining in the driver's seat to claim the SEC regular season championship. We'll dive deeper into that. Oh, we're going to talk some American Alliance football, the Alliance, me and Cody Schutz will, because not only did we make the Met Show happen, the Met Show led the Memphis Express to their first victory of the season. So we'll dive into that. We'll have a special Raging Cajun edition of the Louisiana Wrap-Up, and we got two great guests lined up in the second hour. Marlon Favorite, LSU legend, New Orleans Saints world champion, and New Orleans native. He's going to help us break down NFL Combine, LSU Athletics, and Mardi Gras. That'll be at 10:02. 10:32, we'll welcome on Jarrett Rozier from Tiger Details. He's going to help us break down some LSU men's basketball talk, and we'll also talk Mardi Gras with him. But we're going to start the day off with the sound that you just heard. NFL Combine's going on. They used to call it the NFL Scouting Combine. Now it's just the NFL Combine.
That's the sound you get. That's just heavy breathing of guys running. That's the long, short, and very short underwear of it.
Yes, the Underwear Olympics, which have now become an institution.
It sounds like I don't even, not even the whole clip. Just listen. Just
okay.
It's like it's a golf match. It's like there's a golf tournament going. All right, he's approaching the front green here. He's lining up his tee shot. What is he gonna like? It's like, come on. It's football. You can be a little more excited. I understand. There's no, like, you know,
the best
craziness,
part of that, but the best part is whoever's on with Rich Eisen there, because Rich Eisen does the
play by play,
the play by play of the NFL Combine, the NFL Network's own Rich Eisen. Is giddy up.
Giddy up. Love right. it. He's right. the best.
What's the over-under on how many stories we're going to hear about Daisy May and Devin White's love for horses in between now and draft night? How many times
Devin
do you
White,
think we're going to hear about these stories?
Devin White will not be brought up without his love for horses and Daisy May being brought up. I don't see anyone talking about Devin White and not at some point being like, Daisy May. I mean, you hear how the clip starts there. The man who rides Daisy May to finals and whatever. It's like, you can't even, you don't even tell me his name yet. He's just the guy that rides Daisy May.
You don't even tell me his name.
If he was in the XFL, the back of his jersey would say Daisy May.
Yes. Devin White had himself a hell of an NFL combine. Things started off with running backs. Nick Brissett took part in it. His numbers were not great. He was one of the slowest running backs. His bench press was among the lowest of the group. But Devin White goes out there on Sunday. And it's as if there's like this gauntlet that's been thrown down amongst the LSU guys. Because before we get to Devin White, Mr. I Love Daisy May, Foster Moreau had himself a hell of a combine as well. Okay, and this is a guy we've talked about it may have been one of the most underutilized offensive skill position guys that LSU's had in a long time. They could never get him going in the passing game. And he started turning heads, Foster Moreau, at the Reese's Senior Bowl in Mobile, where he was named a practice player of the week by the coaching staff. He had that video where he burned University of Miami Hurricane DB for a touchdown during practice. He impressed the NFL scouts, and all of a sudden you heard about his draft stock starting to rise during the Reese's Senior Bowl. Now, this is a guy who only had, I think, 22 catches, a little over 200 yards, two touchdowns during the regular season, because Foster, even though it was promoted throughout the entire, remember last offseason, we're going to use the tight end more. We're going to use the passing attack with the tight end more.
You feel dumb for believing that, don't you?
And we've heard that for years, right? Here's this guy who's going to be playing in the NFL, who's now gone from being like a sixth round to seventh round draft pick after the Senior Bowl and now after the combine. Don't be surprised if this guy gets drafted in the fourth or the fifth round. There's a lot of really good tight ends in this draft class, but Foster brings leadership. Foster also does something that a lot of tight ends aren't being taught how to do these days, and that's how to run block. And that's why he didn't have as many catches, receptions, yards, and touchdowns this year, because LSU's offensive line was, let's be honest, at times hot garbage, and they needed Foster in there to block. So he started turning heads back at the Senior Bowl. Well, Foster laid it down Friday and Saturday because he ran a 4.66 in the 40-yard dash. He's a tight end. He's a tight end, and he's running a 40-yard dash of 4.66. That was one of the best of the tight end group, of all the tight ends that took part in the drill at the combine there held at Lucas Oil Stadium in Indianapolis. He also did 22 on the bench press. Now, those bench press reps are 225 pounds. He did 22 of those. So he showed off his strength. He showed off his speed. Oh, by the way, he's a great run blocker. He's apparently a great interview, has leadership qualities. He's 6'4", 253 pounds. Cody, 6'4", 253, and ran the 40-yard dash 4.66.
If he doesn't make it in the NFL, he sounds like a good candidate for one of those guys to transfer over to the WWE if football doesn't work out.
I mean, he's a state guy. He prepped at Jesuit High in New Orleans. He was viewed as a late-round draft selection by most analysts, but I'm telling you, his performance at the NFL Combine, he also performed well in a ton of other drills. He'll do well at the Pro Day. Someone is going to take him probably in the fourth or fifth round. He may even sneak up into the third round if a team is needing a tight end, a pass-catching slash run-blocking tight end that has leadership. So he sets the bar for you. He gets things rolling. Foster does. And then Devin White's like, okay. Okay, man, I got you. he goes out there, and Devin White, your Dick Butkus Award winner for the nation's best linebacker, he ran a 40-yard dash that was 4.42 seconds. He's built like Foster Moreau. He's a little bit. He's not. He doesn't weigh as much. He's what about 240? I think his combine weigh in was around 237, 238. He killed it in all the other categories as well. Bench press, cone drill. Just went absolutely crazy. And Devin Bush Jr., that's the guy from Michigan, I do believe, the other linebacker. He ran a blistering 40 as well, but Devin White barely beat it. And then as we found out this morning, Greedy Williams said, okay, I see you, Foster. I see you, Devin White. I'm gonna run a sub-440 at the combine because today is DB's day. So Greedy Williams and John Battle will be taking part in all the drills. But Devin, there's a clip out there where he was so emotional about his 40-yard dash. He gets done running the 40-yard dash, and he was overcome with emotion by the fact that he ran so well. And that's something as well about him is that the leadership that he provides, what he does, it means something to him. It meant something to him to be an LSU Tiger. It means something to him to perform well and to rep LSU at the combine.
A grown man trying so hard not to break down in front of a room or a field full of other grown men. I mean, that is, he's on both knees. He fell to the ground. He wasn't even able to like stand. I guess they handed him his phone or something because he's holding something that obviously has either his time or
it's either a phone or it's like a digital
breakdown of what he did or something. And he's seeing and going through it, and after about 2 seconds of looking at it, he falls to his knees. And then at that point, he's not looking at the phone anymore or whatever it is. He's just attempting to keep his composure.
I want that guy on my team. Right, Cody? I mean, that's the thing. We know that he's a physical specimen. We know that he makes people remind them of Patrick Willis, the former Ole Miss linebacker and San Francisco 49er All-Pro. Okay? We know what he brings to the table. We know that's the kind of thing right there is why he was so revered by his teammates and by the coaching staff at LSU. They see his passion. They see his dedication. They see that he has this absolute love for the game. There's no question mark, and this is not to pile on other guys in the past. But there's been some cats that have come through LSU that we have questioned, we in the media and fans and, hell, even players, former players, have questioned their resolve to be great and their passion to be a legendary LSU Tiger. We've talked about this before, Cody. No one's ever going to say that about Devin White. That's the kind of emotion, that's the kind of dedication, that's the type of effort that made him a beloved Tiger with the fans, with the coaching staff, through two coaching staffs, Les Miles and Ed Orgeron's. His teammates love him. But to put just how dominant Devin White's 40-yard dash at the NFL Combine was? Here's some notable 40 times for former LSU players. You ready for this?
Mm-hmm.
Leonard Fournette, a running back, he ran a 4.51 40 at the Combine. Tyrann Mathieu, the Honey Badger, one of the best safeties in the NFL, speedy, quick, strong. He ran a 4.50. Darius Geis, electric running back.
Right.
4.49. These are all worse than Devin
slower,
White's.
Yes.
Slower than Devin White's. Odell Beckham Jr.
Mm-hmm.
4.43. Devin White ran a quicker 40-yard dash at the NFL Combine than one of the best and quickest wide receivers in the NFL.
Yeah.
One of the best, two of the best running backs out of college that are currently in the NFL, and a speedy safety slash return guy.
He's a linebacker. Not to mention, this isn't Devin White related, but there's a defensive end from Mississippi State who ran faster than all of them.
Montez Sweat?
Yeah, 4.41.
He's like 260 pounds.
Doesn't matter.
He's 260 pounds.
He's so fast. He's so fast, though.
It's like,
once you get all that weight moving one direction, it's going quick.
Montez Sweat from Mississippi State, Quinnen Williams from Alabama. All these guys are like 260 to 200.
Fat guys. They are fat guys.
80-pound guys that are running 4.5s, 4.40s.
These aren't like Cam Jordan, like big dudes, but like really in shape. No, these are fat guys running like sub 4.5s.
That's scary.
Yeah. Get out of the way.
Like what? You're that big and you can run that quick?
You just pray because of their position. They never have a chance in game to get up to a full head of steam.
But a tremendous weekend for Devin White. You know he killed it in the interview portion with all 32 teams. You know that. And he just solidified himself more than likely as a top 10 pick. Foster Moreau has solidified himself probably as a mid-round pick now. He went from a late to a mid. And Greedy Williams, with his sensational 40 time earlier today, probably locked up becoming a top 10 pick as well. They'll continue to increase their draft stock at the Pro Day coming up on the 22nd. Of March, held there at LSU, but the Combine's the one that really matters. Pro Day is just trying to improve on a few things, but you're going to see plenty of LSU guys get their names called at this year's draft. That's for sure. When we come back here on The Rap Game with RP3, we're going to keep talking LSU with you as we're going to dive into hoops, pulling out the big win on the road against Alabama. Right here on 103.7 The Game, your home of the LSU Tigers.
Hall playing way out top, gets it to Norris in the left corner, steps away, now skip pass, stolen by Waters, Tremont Waters, by his lonesome, goes in, off the glass, Mays with a two-handed jam.
Welcome back to the Rap Game with RP3. I'm your host, Raymond Parse III, here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios.
Now, look, I'm going to throw you this segment off the backboard. I need you to slam it home.
Oh, nice. Nice. I appreciate that. I appreciate that. So you're essentially Tremont Waters, and I'm Skylar Mays in this role play?
That is actually, even if we were really to like start like somehow LARPing the LSU basketball team, that would probably be how it would work out.
Yeah,
Clint is Naz Reid, absolutely, 100%. Big body, banging down below the post there, getting it done, all the boards.
No.
I tried.
So, LSU remains in contention for the SEC regular season championship and the all-important number one seed in the SEC tournament that's going to be held in Nashville with that 74-69 win over Alabama on Saturday. You heard Chris Blair, the voice of the LSU Tigers, on the call. You also heard the game live right here on 103.7 The Game. Alabama gave LSU a fight, anticipated that. Will Wade even talked about that during the week last week, that he anticipated a tough battle from Alabama. We talked to beat writers far and wide that always say that it's difficult for LSU to win on the road, and they've had trouble beating Avery Johnson. Remember, Avery Johnson And Alabama swept LSU last year in the series. LSU then returned the favor this year with Will Wade taking both games this year. Alabama proved to be pesky, but LSU was able to make enough plays to pull out the road win. They remain perfect in SEC play on the road as well. Naz Reid had a double-double, 12 points, 13 rebounds. Javonte Smart, 19 points. Skylar Mays, 20 points. Tremont Waters, he only played 24 minutes. We anticipated that his playing time would be regulated because of the viral infection that he had. He missed two games, the Tennessee game and the Texas A&M game, that they were going to bring him slowly along. They need him more on Wednesday night this week at Florida than they did at Alabama, okay? And there's no point because they're going to need a healthy 110% Tremont Waters if they want to make a run in the SEC tournament and want to make a run in the NCAA tournament. So he only played 24 minutes, only had 5 points, 3 assists, a couple of rebounds, but he got some reps, right? And then he'll go through the recovery process, and he'll be back up and running for LSU on Wednesday when they have to go and play at Florida. Once again, another tough test for this LSU team. They're perfect on the road in SEC play this year. Tremendous. Far more improved than they were last year. But Florida beat them inside the PMAC. And Florida is a tough, scrappy, defensive-minded team. And LSU struggles in Gainesville, traditionally speaking, when it comes to basketball. So, the LSU men's basketball team knocked down one. They got two games to go. SEC title is in their grasp. But they have to remain focused. They have to have Tremont Waters healthy. They took a step in that direction Saturday, getting the win at Coleman Coliseum.
They're going to need to play better than that, though.
They're going to have to play. You're exactly. They're going to have to play better than they did against Texas A&M as well and Alabama if they want to beat Florida this week on Wednesday. But we'll dive more into that in the second hour with our friend Jarrett Rozier from Tiger Details. He'll help us break down that game. But when we come back here on the Wrap Game with RP3, we're going to talk LSU baseball. It was a weekend to forget, but don't hit the panic button, Tiger fans. It's not the end of the world. I'll explain why. Right here on Wrap Game with RP3 on 103.7 The Game, your home of the LSU Tigers.
Here's the 3-0 pitch. This one's hit well out to right center field gap. It's going to get down and score the run. Zach Watson. With a knock up the middle, the second of the game, the second of the inning, Brock Mathis will score the first run of the game. Tigers lead it 1-0. Bases loaded. Here's the 2-2. This one hit out to right center field. Will it get down? It will. Duke Ellis over to cut it off. Every Tiger will advance up 90 feet. Tigers put another run on the board. It's 5-3 now.
LSU Tigers appeared to salvage the series on Sunday.
Not so fast.
At the University of Texas by building up a lead and then handing the ball off to Todd Peterson, their shutdown sensational closer. But that's not how it worked. Peterson gave up the save and then got tagged with the loss. And number one / number two ranked LSU got swept by then-ranked number 18, Texas. First losses of the season, first weekend series sweep. LSU has already dropped out of the top 10 in three of the major polls. In Baseball America, they went from number 2 to number 10, so they're still in the top 10. I apologize. So they dropped from 2 to 10 in Baseball America's poll. And D1Baseball.com, they went from 2 to 13. In Perfect Game, they went from 1 to 14. They'll likely continue that with the rest of the polls that are released today. So, is the sky falling for LSU, who returns to action on Wednesday there at Alex Box Stadium against Holy Cross before gearing up for a three-game weekend against California? out of the Pac-12. The Bears are going to be coming to town for a three-game series at Oxbox Stadium. You can listen to all three games live right here on 103.7 The Game, starting with Friday's game, 6:30 pregame, 7 first pitch. Saturday, 2:30 pregame, 3 o'clock first pitch. And then Sunday we'll wrap it up right here on 103.7 The Game with 11:30 pregame, 12 o'clock first pitch. So is the sky falling? Paul Maneri, longtime head coach of the LSU baseball program, College World Series champion, said, "We've got to get better."
Hot take.
That's, and if you listen to him the way he said it, Cody, it's very matter of fact.
Right. He's not pulling any punches. He's not beating around the bush when he says that.
He said, "We got to get better." And there's a couple things that were apparent in this series against Texas. The LSU pitching staff needs a little work. Game 1, 8-1, loss. Game 2, 8-4, loss. Game 3, 7-6. They gave up 8 runs per game. I don't care how talented that lineup is with Antoine Duplantis and Daniel Cabrera and Zach Watson and the boys. It does not matter if your pitching staff is getting beat up. And the problem was that they weren't necessarily getting beat up. It's not like Texas just went long ball on them the whole weekend there in Austin. The LSU pitching staff, here's a stat for you, Cody. In the three-game series, LSU's pitchers walked 22 batters and hit 2 more. They put 24 men on base, and a lot of those walks and a couple of those hit were early in the count.
There were some walks that started 0-2.
Yes.
Got the guy down 0-2, and then free pass.
So not only was the pitching staff, and I know there's been a lot of talk about Zach Hess. Is he the Friday night guy? Is he the guy that's going to set the tone for the LSU pitching rotation? He had another poor outing, 4 innings, gave up 3 runs on 6 hits, had 4 walks. He struck out 6. We could have a conversation about Zach Hess probably being a better guy out of the bullpen, that he's a dominant bullpen arm. That's what he's projected to be at the next level anyway. But that's not today's not the day for that.
I do want to say this, though, about Zach Hess. This specific outing for him, he did show some signs of a Jared Poche-type outing, if you will, taking that line drive right back at him off the, I believe it was the tricep, they said is where it ended up hitting, and, you know, not coming out of the game, getting in there and battling. But Paul Maneri, he probably said this himself, left Hess in 1 inning too long. So that can kind of be looked at as the head coach. You got to get your guy out sooner than that. The problem on top of all of that, though, is that inning that Maneri should have gotten him out sooner was like going from the fourth to the fifth. You would like that inning where the guy comes out to be going from like the sixth to the seventh or the seventh to the eighth, not that early in the game. But Zach Hess did show some battle back, some grit, some toughness, you know, sticking it out after a very rough start to the game. It didn't all come together, you know, I guess, on the offensive side either, so.
Yeah, and
the game got away from him late in that 8-1 loss in game 1. It got away from him late.
And this notion of he's a closer, not a starter. I get that. There's people out there that are tweeting Zach Hess sucks. Okay, angry LSU fans are already got their pitchforks out for the young man. I get it. But if you actually look at his stats from last year, which was an up-and-down year, he had a couple bad games early on, and then he had a very bad game in the Corvallis Regional. The rest of the season, Cody, he was very good. This is what you're going to get with Zach. Is my rebuttal is, He's a power pitcher. Power pitchers typically have problems with what? Control. They typically walk guys, and they typically give up hits and runs. This is what they do. Does Zach need to pitch better? Yes. Is Paul Maneri going to make a change to appease fan base that may be disgruntled with Zach Hess? Hell no. He told us at Media Day, Zach Hess is what?
The dude.
My dude. That's my dude.
I will say this, and I know you have this in your notes or whatever have you, but Zach Hess, as much as he struggled in this weekend, Hess alone did not walk 22 Longhorn batters. It goes to the other starters.
Yeah,
he only
walked four.
That's what I'm saying. Four. So for 22 guys to get walks over the weekend, Zach has to only give four walks up. That's still too many, but everyone else is also walking batters, and that is what me and my dad were, not butting heads, but we were trying to figure it out watching, I believe it was Saturday's game. I forget.
That'd be Marceau. That'd be the true freshman out there.
It may have been. Yeah, it was Saturday's game. Watching right. that. And just the walks and the walks. And then they go to the bullpen and they go to Riggs Threadgill and he's walking guys and walking guys. And then they go to a guy, George is his last name, and he's walking guys and
this
walking
happens.
Guys.
This here's my other point. Zach Hess will be fine. Do I think he's a Friday guy? Maybe not. He probably is better suited because of his stuff, of his actual arsenal of pitches and what he brings as a pitcher when he takes the bump. Is better suited as a Sunday guy.
Right.
Your Sunday starter typically in college baseball in the three-game weekend series, that's the guy that usually gives up more runs.
Who's okay? The weakest of the three, yeah.
Okay. So do I think Zach Hess could be a dominant Sunday guy for them? Absolutely. But here's the thing, and everyone's like, well, what are we going to do? First of all, breathe. LSU legend himself, Ben McDonald, said as much. Championships are not won in March. In 8 weeks, this series against Texas will not matter.
Championships aren't won, but lessons can be learned.
Correct. Okay? Here's another thing. If you do move around your rotation, it's real simple. It's not difficult, Cody. If Walker gets healthy, he could be your Friday guy. Okay? It's going to take Eric a little while. We talked about this at the start of the season. It's going to take Walker probably about a month to get back to the point where he returns to his form. So let's say SEC play comes around. Let's not think about the three-game series against Cal, which is intriguing. Okay. It is an intriguing series because you're playing a marquee team from a power conference. Okay.
Power. Eh.
Is that what you just which program has the most College World Series championships?
And when's the last time they won one? When's the last time they won one?
I'm just saying.
I mean, USC has the most by double. I understand that, but.
I'm just saying.
Let's talk modern era college baseball.
It's still a power
five. You want to talk modern era college?
Yes. modern era has been dominated by LSU and Texas and little Cal State Fullerton.
It was the battle of the. Don't forget Fresno State that one time. The battle of the six-time national champions, and LSU got swept out of the ballpark. Did you see that, though, in the broadcast? If you watched it, the bases, they had the little emblems on them, battle of the six-time national champions with the logo. It was really cool.
It was very cool.
I also laughed at how hype and everyone was there for, like, the largest attended ball game there since, like, the A&M series 3 or 4 years ago, and they had, like, 7,100 people there. And it's like Alex Box will pack in like 12,000 on Florida weekend.
LSU baseball is a different beast, man. I try to explain it to folks
it's weird.
Outside, and they're like, boy, LSU, they really love college baseball. Says, you have no idea, brother. It is a different animal altogether.
Now, we've talked a lot about the pitching, and the walks are killer, and Zach Hess struggling.
Real quick before we go into our next point. You still got Hilliard, who was a starter for you last year, who's coming off an injury, and he's looked good in spurts. So everyone's freaking out. Look, this rotation, they have so much depth that even if you do move Zach Hess around, let's say you swap spots and you make Zach Hess your Sunday guy, Walker your Friday guy, okay? Then you have Jaden Hill or Marceau, your two freshmen, as your Saturday guy. Either one of those guys. Maneri said we're starting off with Marceau, but they could very easily go to Jaden Hill as the other Saturday guy. Okay, well, let's say Zach Hill doesn't work out. Hilliard looked really good last year. So right there, I'm giving you five guys that can be part of your three-man rotation. So just because Zach Hess is struggling right now and just because Marceau's got teed off a little bit over the weekend, don't freak out. They have enough depth, and once they get healthy with Walker being fully back with his stamina and with his strength and the same thing with Hilliard, they're going to have five guys that they can have out there for their weekend rotation, guys. They're going to be just fine. They're going to be just fine. Another concern, though, Cody, and I think you were going to hit on this.
Mm-hmm.
They left 22 runners on base in the series.
I was going to ask you, let's say, for hypothetically speaking here, LSU pitching does turn around, and somehow going into conference play, the pitching gets better.
Which they'll open with Kentucky, I do believe.
Right. If that does happen, do the bats worry you?
No.
Okay.
They still have Antoine Duplantis and Daniel Cabrera, and they still have
Josh
Zach Watson.
Smith is out of his mind. I get it. But
right. And
low outputs this weekend, though, for sure.
Yes, but once again, all things considered, it's what month again?
It is the very, very beginning of March.
There we go. It's only the third week of the season, correct?
You're right.
Yeah, okay. And look, and I know if there's some struggles this weekend, because you know who's coming to town when Cal comes to town. If you get a chance, you should go over and watch a game, because you're going to see the reigning Golden Spikes Award winner, the nation's best player in Andrew Vaughn, going to be taking the diamond for Cal.
Dang, he's under my radar. I got to figure that out.
Yeah, I want to say he plays first base. He's a junior. He won the Golden Spikes last year, nice. The nation's best player. So I'm assuming that he's probably going to be licking his chops a little bit thinking about playing these guys, but would you be surprised? I'll ask you this, Cody, and we'll get out of the break. Would you be surprised if LSU bounces back and takes two or three from Cal?
No, because it's at home, and two, Cal's not Texas. They have the best player in the country, maybe, but they're not Texas, and back at the box.
There you go. So, we'll see. We'll talk more about this later this week, but I understand it's a disappointing weekend for the LSU baseball team, but the sky is not falling, and these are the type of things a veteran coach like Paul Maneri can build off of. And here's the other thing. Do y'all forget that the majority of this team was on last year's team, the team that a month before the end of the regular season appeared to not even be going to be making the NCAA postseason? They had to battle their way to get to a damn regional. So, yeah, they got the number one recruiting class, and they got all these guys coming back and all these draft picks coming back, and they got Walker coming back and Smith coming back from injury. But it's still going to take a while for this team to gel. It's not going to happen in March. Be patient, LSU fan. We'll wrap up the first hour of Rap Game with RP3 right here on 103.7 The Game after this break.
Win.
Win. Win. Win.
Make it a win.
Our boy, your boy, Acadiana in LSU Nation, Meddy B, the
win,
Met Show.
Win, win.
Zach Menberger tasted victory for the first time as a professional quarterback.
Tastes so good.
That's right. The former LSU star.
All he needed was one start. That's all he needed.
Had an overall record of 0-10 as a starter during his time with the Tennessee Titans. But that was before he took the field on Saturday.
When
he led the Memphis Express to a 26-23 victory over the San Diego Fleet. No more winless record for Meddy B. No more winless record for the Memphis Express.
It's time to turn around. Midway point of the season. Time to turn this thing around. Finish at 500.
He said afterwards, there's nothing better than winning.
Win! Win! Win!
18 of 25, the Met Show was. For 174 yards.
Not bad.
Very efficient. One passing touchdown. One rushing touchdown. Who knew?
Oh,
had the
what?
Legs. Matty B has the wheels.
Look at him.
Showing him off in the Alliance.
Running like a gazelle.
Quarterback rating, you ready for it? 104.4.
I mean, you can't beat that either. I mean, that's a very good game. That would explain why the Memphis Express got their win.
But the Met Show, our boy. By the way, the Rap Game is a big Memphis Express supporter.
Yes, official team, Alliance team of the Rap Game, the Memphis Express.
That's right. I don't believe there's another show in the state of Louisiana that reps the Alliance better than we do.
I haven't found it yet. I have not found it.
Now, there's probably a bunch of stations that aren't even aware of the Alliance.
Well, shame on them.
Shame on them. But Zach was humble afterwards. This is what he had to say, the former LSU Tiger. You're only as good as your next performance. That's all that matters. You guys are going to do y'all's job tonight, but in 24 hours, no one's going to care. It's all about next week. We just got to stack it, and go 2-0 and hopefully get a run going. That's what you want to hear from your quarterback.
Exactly.
I'm sure Mike Singletary was very, very, very happy about this. You know, he nearly brought him back last week, coming in down 9-0 after Christian, I'll be working at Hardy soon, Hackenberg, got benched. He nearly brought him back for a victory then, wasn't able to do so, but he got the start. He got all the reps with the first team offense last week, heading into Saturday's game. Pulled out the win. Now, look, they still have a long way to go, the Memphis Express. They're 1-3 overall, but you know what's coming up on Sunday. Here's the thing. LSU fans, Met Show fans, Cody Schutz.
Yep.
RP3. The Memphis Express will be taking on the Atlanta Legends on CBS Sports Network on Sunday at 3 p.m.
I have to check that. I'm always down to watch an Atlanta football team lose.
And what better way than a former LSU Tiger to be able to do that, to go in there and hang an L on those Legends.
I'm about it. I need to start setting my DVR for these things. If I can't remember to watch them live, I need to at least DVR these suckers.
But congratulations to the former Tiger, Zach Mettenberger, getting his first win as the starting quarterback of the Memphis Express, getting the Memphis Express their first win, and also getting his first win as a professional quarterback. Metty B was 0-10 during his time with the Tennessee Titans.
Go get him now, though, Zach.
He's out there. He's out there slinging it, throwing touchdown passes, running for touchdowns.
And Metty B for comeback player of the year in the Alliance.
Oh.
I don't even know if that's a thing.
Well, it's the first year of the league, but I got you. I love the passion. Second hour coming up here of Rap Game with RP3. We're going to lead things off with our good friend, Talk to Me Somebody himself. Marlon Favorite's going to join us right here on Rap Game with RP3 on 103.7 The Game.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette. We are Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time to step your game up.
Boy, you wouldn't know how to write your name if it wasn't set
on your locker.
It's Rap Game with RP3. Raymond Parts III.
One of God's own prototypes. A high-powered mutant of some kind never even considered for mass production. Too weird to live, too rare to die.
Want to interact? Call in at 337-706-0111.
We have it. Yeah, we have it.
RP3 is taking the mic and bringing you to the center of the sports world on Rap Game with RP3 on 103.7 The Game and 1037thegame.com.
You just got to keep living, man. L-I-V-I-N.
Solid. I'll tell you what I'm blathering about. I've got information, man.
Welcome back to the Rap Game with RP3. I'm your host, Raymond Parts III, here on 103.7 The Game, broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios here in Upper Lafayette. Just want to give you guys a reminder that you can catch all of the local Acadiana Marsh Madness right here on the Delta Media family of stations. Tuesday, Karen Crow, the defending Class 4A champions, will be taking on Bossier there at the top 28 in Lake Charles. You can listen to the pregame at 6 o'clock on Z1059. On Wednesday, defending state champion as well. St. Thomas More will be taking on U High in the top 28 in Lake Charles. Pre-game for that will be at 4:30, tip at 5. That can be listened to on 97.7 as well as 1330 The Rewind. So we'll take care of you for our local Acadiana teams trying to win state championships. But right now, to lead off the second hour, we're going to welcome on a man that has accomplished so much. National champion, SEC champion at LSU as a starter defensive lineman. He won a Super Bowl championship with the New Orleans Saints. Now, he's part of the LSU Sports Network radio show. He's also a talent on ESPN NOLA 100.3 FM. And he is the host of Inside the Trenches podcast, which you can go download right now on iTunes. It's our good friend, Marlon Favorite. Marlon, welcome back to the Rap Game, brother. How are you this morning?
Glad to be back, baby. Hello, somebody. Talk to me, 337.
Well, Marlon, man, I wanted to bring you on to talk about a multitude of things. Let's start it right off with, man. So let me say, over the weekend, I guess you you called up your boy Devin White and you told him, like, look, man, I can run a really good 40-yard dash. You need to step your game up. You need to go out there and show everyone what Big Fave could do in the 40-yard dash. Is that what happened, man? Is that why he was so inspired to run a great 40-yard dash?
Of course that's what happened, man. I gave him a call. I'm like, look, man, I was 317 pounds when I ran my 40-yard dash. And I was in the fours, baby. So if you're not in the mid to low fours, we got a problem. So, you know, being the guy that Devin White is, the LSU Tiger, he want to join this NFLSU crew. So he did the best thing he could do to put himself in the position to run the fastest time out of all the linebackers at the 4.42 speed. Hello.
Marlon, it was a terrific weekend so far for a lot of the guys. That, you know, six Tigers are there at the Combine at Lucas Oil Stadium there in Indianapolis. Foster Morrow, who was underutilized in his time at LSU because he had to be used as a run blocker, but that run blocking is actually going to be attractive to a lot of NFL teams. But he started turning heads at the Senior Bowl with his performance during practice and during the game. He helped his draft stock a lot as well. He ran a terrific 40, had 22 bench on the bench press. What have been your thoughts about your fellow LSU brethren, how they performed with Foster Moreau, Devin White, Greedy Williams, and everyone so far? What have you thought how they've done in Indianapolis?
I thought they did well. I really thought that they interviewed well, you know, just based off what I heard the commentator saying. And Foster Moreau, man, he ran a really fast time for tight ends. I want to see he ran a 4.6. Very impressive. I was actually talking about Foster Moreau on the Sports Hangover with Gus Cattingale last week, and you know, he wasn't featured a lot, and RP, you know, is obviously from, you know, I was attending the LSU games, watching in the press box, but he wasn't featured a lot, but when he did make a play and when he did get the ball, he did very well. So in a league where, you know, athletic tight ends are being used more often, Foster Moreau shows that he has really good hands, great attitude. He's a 504 boy, baby. Hello, somebody. Don't get better than that. I was going to Jesuit High School here in the New Orleans area. So I do believe that similar to, I guess I could say, DJ Chark, he's going to, you know, make an immediate impact at his pro day. And I think he'll have a successful career in the NFL. We're probably looking at anywhere between, especially that 4.6 40, we're probably looking at anywhere between, you know, third round and sixth round for Foster. But, you know, a guy like that get drafted. Really great leader in the locker room and could potentially be a long-term NFL player.
How good would Foster look in the black and gold, Marlon? Because, you know, they need a tight end, brother.
They need a tight end that's very attractive. I think, you know, they're starting to – LSU – I mean, excuse me, the New Orleans Saints are starting to show the Tigers some love again. It's been a while since we've seen LSU Tigers on their roster. Like that. I mean, with the exception of course, recently, Will Clapp and Delvin Bro. But I think it would be a good fit for him. You know, he's a guy from the area, native of the area, someone who, I mean, of course they're familiar with. I'm pretty sure they had a sit-down with him at the combine. Going to have a second sit-down with him after the Senior Bowl, after the pro day. So, in my opinion, if you ask me, RP, man, I think it'll be a good fit for him, man, for real. Physical blocker, he can catch.
Yeah, he does all the things that Sean Payton wants out of a tight end. That he can block and be a great pass catcher. And with the Saints not having that many picks, Marlon, they could use one of those mid-round picks that they have on taking a guy who's probably going to end up being one of the steals of the draft. He's definitely a sleeper guy. Let's move it forward to Devin White. You know, we jokingly said about his 40 time, but, you know, I know you watched. He was very emotional after that 40 time, man. He kind of broke down and was crying and showing emotion, just pure joy and ecstasy from his performance. You know, for me, man, I want a guy like that on my team because that's the type of emotion and that's the type of cat that he is that made him so beloved by his teammates and the coaching staff. If I'm an NFL GM, besides the fact that he's a physical freak, I want that emotion. That's good emotion. That's not bad emotion. That's good emotion. And I want that guy on my team.
Oh, no doubt. He's definitely someone you want on your team. He's a guy that, for one, I thought that his emotion showed a lot about his character. It's someone who doesn't do this, hey, I want to go to the NFL. This is a job interview. No, that's not – you can tell that's not Devin White's thing, man. He's passionate about the game, and this is a dream for him. Guy that once was a running back, obviously understands that element of offense. But, I mean, you're talking about sideline to sideline, someone who's going to make every tackle possible, and you can use him in the rush game. Not to mention, he's a guy that definitely, he's a guy that, in my opinion, he definitely sets the bar in regards to team leadership. I mean, just being around him, recently here in the last 2 years working with the LSU Sports Network, just talking to the kids, the teams rally up around him. They really believe in his leadership. And that type of attitude, that type of play for a guy like Devin White, man, he'll play over 10 years in the league, man, just off of that. So good luck to him. He's definitely somewhere in the top five for sure.
We're on with Marlon Favorite. He's part of the LSU Sports Radio Network. He also is the host of Inside the Trenches podcast, which is available on iTunes. Marlon, the combine experience for you, I know it's been a minute, and it's gotten more and more, famous, I guess would be the best way to say. You know, it used to be no one paid attention to the combine. Now we pay attention to everything that's involved in the NFL draft process. Your experience with the NFL Combine, what was that like?
It was a great experience, man. It was really an eye-opener, what you call a dream come true. When I went to the Combine, I was actually fresh out of surgery. I think I had just had my surgery like 2 months prior. So I didn't do any of the D-line drills. I didn't run the 40-yard dash at the Combine. I interviewed. And I want to tell a cool story, too, man. I thought, you know, was really interesting about the interview. And I encourage, you know, for all the, you know, young listeners that's listening right now that may be taking that next step next year, we're all given these cards, necklace cards, and it have all your official interviews on it, right, at the Combine. All the teams are supposed to interview. And I'm pretty sure a guy like Greedy Williams and Devin White, they probably had 25 teams on their card. Well, I only had one team on my card. I'll reveal that team here in a second. So you go to the train station and do all those interviews, and then there are the official interviews inside the hotel with the different teams. So it's really a job interview. You know, you sit down in front of the entire staff, GMs, head coaches, and they ask you a series of questions. And I think the best advice I could give, you know, young talents is just to be honest, you know, be very honest. So the one team that I had on my card was the Carolina Panthers. Months later, I went undrafted to the Carolina Panthers. So it just shows you, you know, how important it is to make that really, really good impression on the first time around. So I thought that was unique about the Combine. But it's just really a great experience. For a school like LSU, we already have 31 teams coming to our pro day, so the combine isn't as significant as it is for others.
And pro day is going to be coming up for LSU on March 22nd. For you, Marlon, you know, the pro day, what's the biggest difference in the experience of the pro day and the combine besides the location? You know, you're going to have all the NFL teams there anyway. What's the difference? Or do you have a different mindset? Is a different way of preparing for the pro day as compared to the combine?
Well, the pro day is your last shot. You know, your pro day is the shot right before draft, you know, the draft day. So it's your opportunity to make your last impression. I think the biggest difference is the bright lights. I mean, LSU's pro day, you know, we get our LSU Nike gear with the pro day information all over, your number on the back. You're at LSU's facility, whereas at the combine, it's, you know, you get this big swag bag at the beginning, have all the Under Armour gear. Now, at the time, it was Under Armour. I don't know if they switched it around. But and just meeting all the different, you know, players that you've heard about throughout the year, other defensive players, guys at your position. I mean, I have long-term friends from the combine. I mean, guys like Corby Irvin, man, rest in peace to my boy Ryan Bryce. He played at Boston College. He had passed away a few years ago. I mean, guys like Everett Brown. Man, the list goes on and on, you know, the different folks you meet throughout that process. So I guess the networking and the, you know, building relationships is one of the main things at the combine, and, you know, meeting the coaches and stuff like that. So, I mean, it was a great experience. I never traded for a world. I was very blessed and fortunate to get the invite and to be able to attend. It's definitely something that's very significant to that experience, for sure.
We're on with Marlon Favre, eyed national champion with LSU and a Super Bowl champion with the New Orleans Saints. Now, Marlon, I ain't going to ask you about why haven't you, gone out there and suited up for a team in the Alliance, in particular the Memphis Express, because apparently every former LSU player is playing for the Memphis Express in the Alliance. But what I want to ask, though, brother, is what do you think of the Spring Football League as a former player, as a guy who, if maybe the Alliance would have been around when you played, because you played in the Arena League as well, this would have gave you another opportunity to kind of suit up and show NFL teams what you could do. What are your thoughts as a former player on what you're seeing from the Alliance?
I love it. I really love it. Honestly, this reminds me a lot of the UFL. So I actually played in three professional leagues, the NFL, the UFL, and the AFL, the United Football League. It was about eight teams. I actually made $1,000 more playing for the UFL than I did sitting on the practice squad in the NFL. I thought that was pretty interesting.
Oh, wow.
So it's a great – yeah. You get your shine on. So this is the UFL 2.0, if you ask me. The UFL, we have like eight games. They have 10. They seem like their money's together. One thing that the league ended up holding, so that was a big deal. But this is a great opportunity. It's the D-League to the NBA. I think it's RP taking me down memory lane here, baby. Now I got another story for our people out there in the 337. So here's this story. I'm playing for the Hartford Colonials, right? This is out in Connecticut.
Okay.
About 2.5 hours from New York City. I'm playing for their team. I actually get picked up by the Patriots. They were sending scouts to those games. So the Patriots picked me up after I left the UFL. I got picked up in the playoffs. So it's a great opportunity. You know, you have an opportunity to get some film out there for some NFL teams to look at. You're making some decent money. For me, you're being featured. Everybody plays. So it wasn't a situation where, okay, we're paying this guy $5.2 million and you're just a guy on the regular roster. He's our starter. No, we all rotated. So it's an opportunity to get back in or make a career out of. These guys are going to make, $75K a year? In some cases, you know, guys got different deals. So I love the Alliance Football League. We talked about that a number of times on the podcast. And I just think it's a great opportunity. There's more football for guys coming out. You know, you don't have that pressure of NFL or bust. So I think it's a great idea, and I hope it lasts long, for sure.
What do you think? We'll wrap it up with this, Marlon. But what do you think about, you know, a guy like Zat Menberger? He gets a chance. You know, things didn't work out for him in Tennessee. He finally gets his first win as a professional quarterback with the Memphis Express over the weekend. And, you know, getting an opportunity to go out there and just play football and be able to, just to have the chance, right? I mean, that's what it's all about. At the end of the day, yeah, it's about money and maybe getting a chance to get back into the NFL. But for a lot of these guys like Zach, it's just an opportunity to get a chance to play professional football for a little while longer.
Yeah, I think it's one of those situations for Zach. You know, he's a guy that ended up getting drafted, right? And he didn't stick, you know, because of that. You know, he's not that he wasn't a bad quarterback, you know, but it's, again, was an opportunity to, you know, gave him an opportunity to get back in football. So for a guy like Zach Mettenberger, he's already won the likes of the coaches, right? He's already done that in the NFL. Now they get a chance to take a second look at him. And at that position, there's not a lot of quarterbacks out there. I mean, this draft isn't loaded with a lot of quarterbacks. And you know this, RP, teams want experience. So, you know, he's a guy that actually played meaningful reps in NFL games. And he's also, given a second opportunity now.
Marlon, man, we'll let you go with this, man. I know it's Mardi Gras season, and I know you rep the 504. So what you got on the agenda for tonight and for Fat Tuesday, brother?
Okay, so we did the non-top parade already. That's our big thing on the West Bank. So I went to that one. We just had Baby Titan Dallas favorite. So I'll probably be with the baby on Mardi Gras morning. And possibly I might go to the Wiz Khalifa and Currency concert Tuesday night. So LSU's in Zulu. I don't know. I might have to talk to my wife. She might force me out there.
Marlon, man, you're living just the best type of life, brother. Congratulations, and just keep it up, man. We'll talk to you soon, my friend. Appreciate you making the time.
Man, thanks for having me, RP. Y'all take care, brother.
All right, man.
Marlon. Like he was juggling about 18 different things going on around. What a pro.
But our man still makes time for us. Marlon Favorite, LSU Tiger legend, Super Bowl champion as well with the Saints. So
I like that piece of advice. I liked his delve into the combine.
Right.
You get your card, and then there's your interview list on your card and things that you're
only
going to find.
Only one team wanted to interview Marlon.
It's interesting.
And that ended up being the team that signed him after he went undrafted, and that just goes to show you, yep. You know, not all these cats are Devin White and Greedy Williams who are going to get taken in the top 10.
There are a lot more Foster Moros than there are Devin Whites.
There's a lot more Marlon Favorites, right? There's a lot of guys who can stick around and make a career out of the, playing in the league in the combine, and that interview yep. is huge.
Let's not act like the Alliance and the XFL aren't looking at these numbers as well. I mean, yeah, it's the NFL combine, but these numbers are still posted for everyone to look at to see how you did. So
that's correct. When we come back, more LSU talk, more sports talk. It is a sports talk radio show, Cody. That's what I've been told.
Last time I checked.
Rap Game with RP3 right here on 103.7 The Game. Back after this break.
Let's put the spotlight on the boot. It's time for the Louisiana Wrap-Up.
Gotta go fast. We're back. Rap Game with RP3 here on 103.7 The Game. We are, as always, in the 237 Roof Studios. And let's go right now. Raymond, lightning edition of the Louisiana Wrap-Up. Let's start right here at home. Let's go over to the Cajun Dome.
Disappointing performance by the Raging Cajuns men's basketball team. They lose at home on senior day, 90-80 to App State, a team that housed them on the road. And you're thinking, well, that's not that big of a deal. No. App State was a 9-win team. And Jakinen Cant had a good game, 23-15, but he fouls out with 4 minutes to go. They led 9-8 early in this game and then never led again at home against a 9. It's the second straight year that the Raging Cajuns men's basketball team has lost on senior day to a team well below 500. Last year Remember the record-setting 27-win season? They lost to a 6-win Little Rock team on senior day. That loss prevented them from getting an at-large bid to the NCAA tournament. Now, the Raging Cajuns are in trouble because they're tied for 5th place now in the Sun Belt standings. The top 6 play their tournament. They play the Sun Belt tournament. They earn a spot at the tournament. They don't have to play one of those play-in games. UL could very well, if they don't win out their last 2 games, they could be playing a play-in game just to get to the Sun Belt Conference tournament.
Nice.
Wow. They let one go. They were dejected and a stunning loss at home to a very bad App State team yesterday inside the Cajun Dome for Senior Day.
We're just about out of time. We have no time to go anywhere else, so we'll stay in Lafayette, but let's talk some baseball.
We talked about it on the show, who would have the better weekend, the Raging Cajuns or the LSU Tigers. I said LSU Tigers. I was wrong.
I agreed. I was wrong.
LSU got swept. The Cajuns take 2 of 3 from Maryland, and they sweep the doubleheader. The rain coming in Sunday forced them to play 2 on Saturday. The first game went 14 innings. It was a marathon game. They get the wins. They take 2 of 3. They're starting to ride the ship. But the Raging Cajuns still have concerns. The bullpen was better this weekend against the Terps, but they were 1 of 28 with runners in scoring position on those 2 games on Saturday.
0.035 average.
Yeah.
1 for 20.
So the bullpen was better, but then they couldn't hit. They couldn't drive in runs. They still found a way to win against a pretty good Maryland team, but the Raging Cajuns, moving forward, have some issues hitting and with the bullpen. So, yes, congratulations to the Cajuns for taking 2 of 3 from the visiting Terps out of the ACC, rather. But there's still work to be done, and Tony Robichaux will tell us as much on Wednesday during his press conference. I can guarantee you that. When we come up, we're going to switch gears to LSU basketball. We'll welcome on our friend from Tiger Details, Jarrett Rozier, right here on the Rap Game with RP3 on 103.7 The Game, your home of the LSU Tigers.
Bama Lewis going to have the ball stripped by Waters with 2 seconds, and the horn will sound. Waters keeps the basketball, and the Tigers get the win here on the road. 7 ranked teams have come out of here losing to Alabama. It will not be an 8 in LSU. Tigers 74, Alabama 69. LSU now 24-5 on the season. Move them to 14-2. Still in the race for an SEC crown with 2 more regular season games remaining.
Welcome back to Rap Game with RP3. I'm your host, Raymond Parsha III, here on 103.7 The Game, broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette. That was the voice of the LSU Tigers, Chris Blair, on the call from Saturday's victory for LSU over a pesky Alabama team. We're going to dive more into that and then look ahead to the Tigers' final regular season road game at Florida on Wednesday. That game can be listened to live right here on 103.7 The Game, pregame 5:30, tip at 6. But we're going to head out to the Arco Equipment Hotline and welcome on our next guest from Tiger Details, the one and only Jarrett Rozier. Jarrett, how are you this morning, brother?
I'm doing well, man. How y'all doing?
We're doing great, man. We're doing great. Let's dive right into that game. We knew Alabama was going to be a challenge. It's tough to tough to win a game there in Coleman Coliseum. It's only the 5th time, I do believe, that LSU has defeated Alabama there inside Coleman Coliseum in the past 25 years. Avery Johnson's a good coach. We know all that. But what were your takeaways from the game? It was close. It was a hard-fought game. Tremont Waters was slowly brought along. He didn't have a sensational game, but he played some minutes, got some reps. What were your takeaways from LSU's win on the road on Saturday at Alabama?
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was a good win. As we've seen in some other games throughout the season, they had a couple of stretches that weren't ideal, and obviously they started really well and then let that lead get away from them late in the first half. And then at a point in the second half when Alabama – break, but they were able to bounce back, come with some big plays, various days with a couple big shots off the bench, and then you know, that play where Tremont ends up lobbing the ball off the backboard to Skyler to kind of be a little bit of an exclamation point in closing that thing out. If you can go win a game on the road in the SEC against, you know, not a great team in Alabama, but a solid team, a pretty good team, that's big pretty much any Saturday or Tuesday or Wednesday or whatever. And this was, you mentioned, a rare win in a tough place for LSU. This is the first time that they've beaten Alabama twice in the same season since 2004. So that's big. Not even that Final Four team did that during that great season that they had. So to do all that with, as you mentioned, Tremont still just kind of working back into it, I think was big for them. Because even when shots didn't fall, they kind of took care of a lot of the things that they could take care of. They took care of the basketball relatively well again and played solid defense to make things frustrating for Alabama offensively as well.
We're on with Jarrett Rozier, Tiger Details. Jarrett, Tennessee did LSU a big favor over the weekend. They beat Kentucky like a damn drum on Saturday, brother, 71-52. I wasn't anticipating that, especially the way those two teams play, but Tennessee got their revenge against Kentucky, beat them like a drum, the number four team in the country. But now with Kentucky's loss, that means it's only between them and Tennessee with two games to go for the SEC regular season championship and the number one seed for the conference tournament up in Nashville. LSU knows this. They're going to know this. These kids know this. They're not stupid. Should we expect, with especially with those results, should we expect an extremely focused effort on Wednesday in Gainesville, which is another tough place for LSU to play?
I mean, they better come focused on Wednesday. They know very well that Florida team is a team that has given them trouble, because Florida just gave them trouble in the PMAC just a couple weeks ago. And you know, we talked about how these Gators are a tough matchup for LSU. Kevon Allen and those guards, kind of a bigger physical, predominantly more veteran guard group. That's the type of team that's given LSU as much trouble this season as anybody. And so it's real exciting right now where LSU is inside track to the number one seed in the conference tournament, and it's something they're very aware of. And that's, again, that's great. But if they don't go to Gainesville and take care of business, that can quickly not matter at all, because if they don't win that game, you don't think that they're going to hold on unless they get some surprise and help from elsewhere, obviously. But you know, Skylar Mays was saying recently that as they get closer, he thinks that they do get hungry as they see how close to you know, to how within reach goals like that are. He thinks the team really does focus better, gets hungrier, buckles down. And so we'll get a pretty clear test of that as they head to Florida. It's a huge game.
Jarrett, what do you think LSU is going to try to do differently this time around on Wednesday against Florida that they didn't do a couple weeks ago?
I think they left that game feeling like they had been out-toughed and out-physical. Not that either of those is words, but that's, you know, they felt like Florida came out there and was the tougher, more physical team and really kind of took the game to them. And they were really frustrated with their own performance to allow that to happen on their home court. And so I think they're going to take a lot of that to heart going now to Florida and realizing everything on the line, all these things we were just talking about, and just trying to be more physical than they were a couple of weeks ago. And get out there and hustle a little bit more to get after some loose balls and rebounds and just, I mean, all those just kind of toughness and manning up type. I think it's going to be that, just kind of them looking at themselves in the mirror and saying they just did this to us a couple weeks ago. They're not doing it again tonight.
Well, with Jarrett Rozier, Tiger Details. Jarrett, let's talk a little NFL Combine, brother. That's been a terrific weekend, so to speak, for the six LSU players. Well, maybe not as much for Nick Brissett, who did not run well or perform well in his drills. But the rest of the guys have been killing it. Foster Moreau, we were just talking with Marlon Favorite about Foster's performance. Great 40 time, great performance on the bench. Interviewed really well, all the reports. And then Devin White just absolutely killed it yesterday with his 40 time. And the emotion that he showed afterwards, man, where he broke down crying out of joy for running a 40 time. What were your takeaways? Let's start there. What were your takeaways of Devin White's performance at the Combine and just the emotional moment that he had there in Indianapolis?
Yeah, I mean, I just thought that was great for him to run like that. I knew he would run fast. I don't know that we thought 4.42 fast. He's personally, I was sitting with Amos Morrell, and he got the notification and said, "What do you think Devin ran?" I was like, I know it's pretty good. Maybe, I don't know, 4.51. He's like, no, lower. I was like, 4.47. He's like, no, 4.42. But good. I mean, good for that dude, because he obviously tremendous athlete. But he's been such a great guy to work with through the years, and such a great leader for that team these last couple of years. So to see him have that type of a performance and really solidify himself among those top picks in the draft. I think that's where you see all that emotion, him coming from the little town up in North Louisiana and working his way all the way to these big stages and continuing to excel and realizing how close he is to that childhood dream that most of these guys grew up with to play at the league and to have an opportunity to be a playmaker in the league. I can't say enough about how great I think that is for Devin, and congrats to him.
And then this morning, it was as if Greedy Williams was like, "Okay, man, I see you. I see you, my friend. I see you, my fellow Tiger." And he just goes out there, and he ran a 4.38 40-yard dash. Greedy Williams did this morning. We knew. Jarrett, we knew during the season, brother, that Greedy Williams and Devin White could be top 10, top 15 picks. The Combine has only solidified that even more so. I mean, Greedy goes out there and ran a sub 440, 4.4 in the 40-yard dash, man. You can't be that surprised, right? I mean, it can't be that surprising that Greedy went out there and did that.
No, I think that's funny when you say Greedy saw Devin and kind of said, okay. I mean, those two guys have known each other a long time. They're really close, and I'm sure they were kind of joking with each other and talking about it in the wake of each of their runs. And that, I mean, to have that type of speed for both those positions is huge. And I mean, just like we were just talking about with Devin and some of what you were just saying, what they were able to do on film really set them up favorably heading into this part of things. But you always see this time of year some guys rise and fall based on some of these combine and pro day performances. And so for them to come out and have those types of showings this weekend really does benefit them a tremendous amount heading into these next couple months of just kind of holding them in that same top 10 to 15 type pick range as people were. We're talking about them before, because if Greedy comes out there and runs a terrible 40, you could see him start to slip. But instead, he comes out and raises a sub 4.4. So, I mean, just it was a big, as you mentioned, for a lot of these guys, it was a really big weekend for the LSU players in the NFL draft.
Jarrett, you know, for a lot of these guys, we know Devin White, we know Greedy Williams has solidified themselves as top 10 picks. Pro Day is going to be coming up on March the 22nd. I've always been a believer of this, is that the Pro Day is good for the stars, the guys that are going to be locks. But the pro day is really the final chance for a guy like Foster Moreau or a guy like John Battle to show NFL teams that they deserve to be drafted and deserve to be invited to camp and earn a roster spot. You feel the same way, right, that the pro day is more about those guys that are having to fight to get drafted and to get looks rather than the stars?
Yeah, especially in the weekend that some of those guys had this weekend, you wonder when we get later into the month, how much do Devin Breedy really need to do at pro day? I mean, you know they'll be there, they'll be involved, but to go to the combine and have the performances they had, it's not a ton to gain for them at that point. But we've seen some of those performances. I mean, Deion Jones is one that kind of comes to mind. He was certainly going to get drafted. This great 40 time. You saw him climb all the way up to a second round pick. And so for guys that maybe didn't have as great of a combine as they would have wanted to or weren't there, and this is kind of their chance to show their capability, this is going to be big for a lot of the other guys that we weren't necessarily just talking about a minute ago.
Jarrett, what about Nick Brissett? He didn't have a great combine. The pro day is going to be his opportunity to kind of improve that 40 time, the bench press and everything like that, right? He's going to be focusing on making a better impression on NFL teams for the pro day in a few weeks.
Yeah, and there's not a lot of people that work harder than Nick, so I know he'll be training hard these next few weeks and just trying to take what happened this weekend, you know, his performance this weekend, as a learning experience to see what areas he can improve on. I'm sure he'll be focused on trying to get that 40 time down a little bit for pro day. And a lot of times the guys do perform a little bit better at pro day, both a combination of just that comfort level where they are instead of being in that potentially awkward combine setting, and then also the opportunity to take that combine as that learning experience and kind of tweak some things and just end up turning that into almost like a practice run for a better pro day back in the home confines. And just like we were talking about with Devin too, certainly you gotta look forward to seeing what Nick can do in that regard with everything that he has meant for in high school football in the state at that time, and then these last several years at LSU waiting his turn and having the season that he had. So there will be a lot of eyes on him to see how much he can help his stock and set himself up for a nice landing spot in the NFL.
Jarrett, before I let you go, by the way, Devin White's 40 time was faster than Odell Beckham and the Honey Badger Tyrann Mathieu. Let that wash over you, that a cat that's six – like is 240 pounds ran a quicker 40 than Odell Beckham and the Honey Badger, bro. Just let that wash over you.
Yeah, when I was still going around the state for the LHSA Game of the Week TV broadcast and chiming in pregame and halftime, we went up to Mansfield when Northwestern was playing there one Thursday night, and before the game, Jessica Province was asking me about just the type of athlete that Devin was. And I talked about how interesting it was to see a guy his size in the state championships as a sprinter, at any time the state championships came around for track for his classification. And I joked on Twitter, I don't know how many people other than maybe me and her remembered that I talked about that combination of size, speed, and physicality as saying, you know, Devin White looks like he's the offspring of a T-Rex and a Mack truck getting together and making this perfect football player combination. That's been Devin since high school. It's impressive and does not cease to be.
Oh man, that's perfect. Jarrett, that's perfect, brother. I got nothing to add to that, man. That was terrific. Happy Mardi Gras, man. Enjoy yourself. Stay safe out there, brother. We'll talk to you next week, my friend.
You got it. Thanks, Russ.
I was going to ask him, about what he was going to do for Mardi Gras, but then he told us that story about how he described Devin White back in high school, and I just, there's nothing else, man. Just go ahead and wrap up the show. We'll come back. We will do that, in fact, wrap up the Rap Game with RP3 right here on 103.7 The Game, your home of the LSU Tigers.
Down in New Orleans where the blues were born, it takes a cool cat to blow a horn. On LaSalle and Rampart Street, the combos play with a mambo beat. The Mardi Gras mambo, mambo, mambo. Mardi Gras mambo, mambo, mambo. Mardi Gras mambo. Down in New Orleans.
Are you ready for it, Ray? Are you ready?
Yes.
Mardi Gras is here.
Well, it's already been here, Mr. Schutz. Saturday, already took part in the Mardi Gras festivities. When you're a married man, you got a kid, you're not, you know, you're not doing like you used to do Mardi Gras. Okay?
Right, fair enough.
Okay. So we had our little parade in Sunset, where we live at, and had a delightful parade. A lot more people, floats and everything. So it was a day of collecting a bunch of beads, having my daughter on my shoulders while she was catching the beads.
Projectiles.
Yes, but it started off with they had carts, like little vendor carts this year.
Right,
coming
right.
down. Sure enough,
uh-oh.
One of them had a rainbow-colored inflatable dolphin that is now inside our house.
Yes, it is. It was the best $15 you ever spent.
She saw it from 20 yards away down Main Street and was like, ooh, Daddy, a dolphin. So Daddy, of course, went to the Sunset Bank where we bank.
Right.
Went to the ATM, got the money out to make sure to have when the guy came down with the damn rainbow-colored dolphin that's now inside our house.
Very good. I do Mardi Gras on Mardi Gras Day. New Roads has two big parades, Mardi Gras Day. My dad owns a little business on the parade route, so we have like an indoor area to hang out.
Hashtag
as well.
Humble brag.
Yeah, exactly. So I am pumped about Mardi Gras tomorrow as well.
We will not be on the air tomorrow, but you guys be safe out there.
Please, please be safe. Please be safe.
Have a safe, have a joyous, celebrate like you haven't celebrated before, but do it smartly. Don't drink and drive.
Laissez le bon temps rouler smartly.
Smartly. We will be back on Wednesday. Up next, Jim Rome Show. Then after that, it'll be the best of the Jordy Holtberg Show from 2 to 4. The brother himself, Bumper to Bumper Sports, will be hosted by the one and only Ben Love from 4 to 7. And then it'll be the Will Wade Show tonight at 7 o'clock. We'll talk to you guys on Wednesday. Happy Mardi Gras, Acadiana.